On this episode of the Autumn Windbacks, it is draft week in 2022. We'll discuss the Raiders' philosophy on drafting this season. The Davante Adams, Josh McDaniels vibe is getting contagious. We'll tell you why. And the Darren Waller trade rumors are squashed officially. And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto. Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto, let's have some fun today. Your brand new camera still throws me off. It's so sharp. Wide angle view, see everything.
Yeah, I can fit my whole fucking fat head in it, not just half of it.
Right? I can see like your childhood memories through your eyeballs. It's so accurate.
Yeah, you don't want to see any of that.
No, it's dark. It's dark. Even the suppressed ones, yeah. I can see them from here. Make sure you like, comment, subscribe. Fantastic show. It's our 99th full show. So we do a lot of, for you people who just listen to the podcast, you're like, what do you mean full show? You only have one type of show. Like those of you watching on YouTube, you're like, no, you guys do clips as well. 99th actual full show that we do once a week in post-game shows. So next week, episode 100, big thing coming. We don't know what they are, but I promise they'll be a big deal.
We'll figure it out.
Good time. Yeah, we'll make it worth your while. Fitting that 99th show is during draft week. We're recording this Wednesday night. You're probably watching this or listening to this Thursday before the draft happens, and you're thinking, all right, I've watched all these mock drafts and everyone's like lining up who the Raiders are going to pick at 87 and who they're going to get in the fourth round and what they're going to do here. And here's their list of top seven left guards. It's like, no, that's not this kind of show. When you start with we're not that kind of show. And I think it's boring, dumb radio. Even if you have a first round pick, like even if you have the 9th overall pick, I find the whole guessing who's going to pick at that spot and who you're going to get, what's the, maybe are you going to trade? What's that going to look like? Just a procedure that leads nowhere. It's just like walking in the dark because so many things can happen. I don't understand. Like, this is what I hate about draft week is there's three things I hate about draft week. This is number one. Everyone has their mock drafts. Not a single one is going to be right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, we don't draft in the first round, so it's going to be a lot closer to how it, quote-unquote, should be. We're not going to take a second rounder and fucking top 10 pick.
Well, it's, you know, and the running joke, of course, is like, well, now the Raiders don't have to waste their first round pick like they always do. It's like, well, yeah, ha, ha, ha. It's a new regime, right? So that's not the case. Vegas should be lit, though.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. You see, the freaking stage looks dope.
Yeah. Yeah. On the Bellagio, like on the Bellagio fountain, stage on the fountain. So when the NHL All-Star game was there a few months ago, they kind of like set a template for it. Like there were skill games where guys would shoot the puck on one side of the fountain, like into a platform in the middle of the lake. It's awesome.
That's pretty sweet.
And it's so much better than having it in like a convention center or like a very specific building where it's like, all right, you pay your ticket and you go in this enclosed area. Like Nashville is the one that like really set things off in the right direction. Like does that entire drag of Nashville is just full. And there's just like, there's like, you know, the special VIP area, ticket area, the seating area. Like you need that for an event this big, but like you want to make that tight. Like you basically want to see where the velvet rope is, but still feel like you're in the party. And that's what the draft has done a good job of doing since Nashville. And of course, Vegas is.
Nashville is so dope. That's a fun little strip right there in Nashville. I got fucked up there a couple of times.
Nashville's most underrated party city.
Dude, that's a freaking great. You only need to go to that one street. That's it. You'll be fine.
If you're going to go to a bachelor party and you want to stay in the States, first off, I'm going to tell you, go to a third world country for a bachelor party. It's well worth the money. It's actually cheaper than going to Vegas. But if you are going to stay in the States, let's say you got a buddy who's got, you know, doesn't have a passport or has a shady pass and you can't
get out of the country. Couple of strikes.
You know, a DUI or something, getting, you know, maybe the passport's not all totally updated. Nashville. You know why? Fine. Because it's 10 to 1 bachelorette parties to bachelor parties. Like, even those bachelor parties are in a buyer's or in a seller's market.
That's like Atlanta, too. Atlanta's like, if you don't mind them being able to freaking knock you out, Atlanta's, because those chicks are tough. But Atlanta's
strip clubs
a lot are a different of breed chicks, too. Man. It's a different animal over there. You're straight in a porno. Like, you are in an adult movie once you walk in there. That camera up there, that's not for security. That's for filming purposes. Like, they're going to sell that clip.
Yeah, that's where
I saw the horn chick. Did I tell you about that?
The horn chick?
The chick that put the fucking like honk horn in between her butt cheeks and she twerked and honked the horn. Atlanta's where I saw that shit. It's like maybe like 05 or 06. That was the first time I saw that. I was like, you know what? That's a clap for showmanship.
If she could play like the Atlanta Falcons fight song with the horn in her butt cheeks. Oh, God,
dude.
You would have proposed right there.
I'm like, what's she going to do with that thing? Honk, 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 honk. I'm like, oh, well, you know, I got my answer.
Yeah. That's the madam at like the ping pong show in like Vietnam, right? Like if she was just born on the other side of the country,
Jesus,
she'd be kicking field goals, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, right.
That ping pong ball. Yeah, Vegas should be lit. It's just one of those weird drafts where because it's like it's weird because it is a awesome draft. For meat and potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
Bunch of old linemen, bunch of wide receivers, got some linebackers in there, some defensive ends in there. Like there's quality and depth at some like meat and potatoes positions. But because there's no like sexy quarterbacks, it's such like a quarterback trash draft, especially compared to last season.
Mm-hmm.
Like everyone's just kind of like overlooking it. And plus it's even, especially for the Raiders, because we don't have a first and second round pick. And because it's very rare that the Raiders roster has no gaping holes where the draft has to bail us out. So it's literally like from just a general sports fan, general football fan's perspective, it's like, all right, we're going to get a backup wide receiver that we need. And we're going to get, a right tackle that we can hopefully develop into something special. And then for the Raiders, it's like, yeah, we're just going to add depth. But that's what we want. Like, well, if you're a GM, you exactly. want to go into a draft not thinking, all right, we desperately need a corner. Whatever it takes, we'll reach. And then we desperately need a linebacker, whatever. Ziegler and McDaniels are just like, all right, best guy on the board. Easy.
The thing, like last year, we reached for Leatherwood and we took him, even though like his big what was enticing about him was his versatility. Now, I don't want a first round pick to be versatile. I want a first round pick to be fucking awesome at their position.
Yeah.
I don't want them like, well, if he doesn't work out a right tackle, we'll just kick him in the guard. Like, no, I don't want to even think that way. All right.
Yeah.
For right now, drafting like last year, if we wouldn't have drafted a right tackle, right? There was still plenty of linemen that we could have gotten in the second, basically, or the third round of free agency, like after the draft. There was guys that you can fit as a stopgap. You don't have to reach for a position just because he's there and just because you need it. There's other ways to fill that gap and fill that role. We ended up fucking starting Brandon Parker there anyway. So I like where we are in the draft. I like just picking the best guy available. Like I said on my show on Saturday, you know what? If we're picking and there's like a freaking dope ass tight end that's available, guess what? Fucking trade Foster Moreau. If he's better than Foster Moreau, you can find things to do if you have too many tight ends. Having too many good players is never a bad thing. You don't have to necessarily keep all three of those tight ends. You can figure out something else out.
Can you imagine if the Raiders went tight end with pick number, their very first pick in round number three, and everyone goes, see, Waller's getting traded. He's going to be a Packer. Just watch. Guaranteed that would happen.
The crazy thing about this draft is like, maybe not the position that gets paid the most, but like positions 2 through 5 are super deep in this draft.
Yeah.
Receiver, tackle, edge rusher, corner, like all the other, like the 2 through 5 positions that you pay a bunch of money for, those positions are super deep and super talented, just not the number one spot, which is the flashy, sexy spot.
And this is the other part that a lot of people don't think about. And I don't want to make it sound like, oh, because we don't have picks one number, you know, rounds 1 and 2, like that's good. That's what we want. We don't want to, that's not what I'm saying, but there is not a minor benefit to not having to pay round one money, right? Like, we're going to get to it here later on the show, but we've got 3 first rounders from the 2019 draft that we have to decide if we're going to get those, that fifth year extension to. And if it's Josh Jacobs, it's like $8-something million because he went to the Pro Bowl. Mm. Right? Like, now if we would have drafted him in round 3, it'd be like couple mil, like it'd be pennies, right? For the exact same player, exact same resume, exact same Pro Bowls, we'd get to pay him less. Clay Farrell, like, he's not a terrible player. Like, I think he's a decent rotational defensive lineman. Like,
why do you keep calling him Clay Farrell? It's Clay Farrell. It's not Clay, it's Clee.
Clee. Whatever. You can clean your ass off. Track together.
Jesus.
But you see my point, right? Because fourth overall, we owe him like $8 million. If we would have picked him up in the 3rd round and like, oh, you know, $1.5 million, $2 million for a rotational defensive player who's a good locker room guy. Yeah, that makes sense. And so that's what we don't have to worry about, is especially in a bad, like if you last draft, right? 6 quarterbacks in the 1st round. You're like, yeah, we'll pay whatever if it's our quarterback of the future, right? If we think Zach Wilson's the guy, Trevor, like we'll pay whatever, like getting him on a rookie contract, that's every team's dream, right? A Pro Bowl franchise quarterback on a rookie contract, right? This is the opposite of that. Like, you don't want a guy, you're thinking like, all right, this guy going to be a good, you know, linebacker for us. We're picking him up at 18th overall, and we're going to have to pay him $8 million 4 seasons from now, right? So the Raiders don't have that problem.
Yeah, we addressed a lot of those. Like I was talking about, you know, in a couple episodes ago, having this kind of this good of an off season as far as free agents goes, we have to do something a little bit different to kind of wash the sins away of the previous regimes, right? We don't have that super young depth on our team. We have some pieces, but we don't have that depth up and down the lineup. So we have to go out and get the Chandler Joneses and the Rock Yassins and the Averitts and all these. We have to go out and get those guys because the ones that we've drafted haven't been producing. Mm-hmm. So that's why we had to go out and get Perryman last year, which worked out great for us. But we don't have those homegrown guys that we can count on to kind of step up and develop them, because they're either not on the team or not even in the league anymore. So yeah. So for right now, I think it's a good situation to be in if you're Champ and Ziegler, because you don't have a ton of pressure on you right now for a first and second round pick, because let's face it, we haven't been great in the early round picks. Let's just see what comes to us, see what happens. I did a couple of mock drafts and I was targeting, you know, a couple of positions, and I was able to trade back a couple of times and still get really good players. So we'll see. I do expect some movement though, and not just in your pants.
Oh, that's I've been at quarter mast ever since we picked up Devontae Adams.
Yeah.
And at half chub since we saw Derek Carr's new contract. That's why I haven't been able to wear sweatpants out in public anymore.
Just board shorts.
I'd end up on the list.
Yeah, right.
So this is the other part about draft week that just bothers the hell out of me. And I know it's a pet peeve of mine, and I'm like, this is really inside baseball, and it's because I've been like working in media for 15 years. You get the absolutely flagrant, just like giving a hand job to an agent with your right hand so you can use that information and pass it off on Twitter with your left. And this is Adam Schefter. This is, you know, the man. Like, this is the most respected journalist and the guy that has his finger on the pulse of football. He tweeted out Wednesday night, "Each year, unexpected players sneak into round 1. One possibility this year is USC pass rusher Drake Jackson, whose agent, Drew Rosenhaus, said that multiple teams predicted to him Wednesday that Jackson, who had 15 top 30 visits, would be a surprise first-round pick.
Bullshit.
Like, what are you doing with this, Schefter? Like, what are you trying to accomplish with this tweet? Like, oh, wow, like, I have an inside on Drake Jackson. Yeah, you mean his agent? The guy that wants him to go as high as possible? The guy that's literally got millions of dollars riding on Jackson going as high as possible in the draft? You've got an insider that says he might be a surprise first rounder?
Yeah, he didn't have any identification, but he had it on his face.
Hey, stripper, I've got an inside track that the guy you're giving a lap dance to me has an 11-inch dong. You know, those 5'9" white guys, when they go into a strip club, every now and then there's a surprise when they're packing a huge dong. And they've got a Ferrari out back. It's a surprise sometimes. Like, This is the shit I can't stand. Okay, I understand Schefter has to play the game. I get that. It's people want to knock sports journalists for, hey, let me do this agent a favor, and then he gives me an inside later. Right? I get that. That's fine. That's okay. But I don't understand this one. The 32 GMs in the NFL aren't going to read this and say, oh, wow.
We better take him two rounds too early.
We better draft him 7th overall. Otherwise, he might go before that because Schefter has an inside with his agent. Like, you're not fooling the 38 GMs in the NFL. Now, there's some dumbass just NFL fans that read that and be like, oh, wow, Drake Jackson, he might be the man. Like, he might be a big deal. But what does that do for you? That doesn't help. Like, do you think, like, if you're Adam Schefter, are you thinking, like, all right, if I tweet this out and a bunch of Jets fans get all excited about it and they're going to tweet at the Jets team at Jets, hey, you better get this guy because Schefter said the agent said he might go fast. And the GM's like, oh, wow, hey, I better listen to these guys. Who are you talking to? Who are you trying to influence if you're Adam Schefter? And I like Schefter. He's great. I just don't. This is draft week brings out the dumb in so many people.
You know, because it's like it's fantasy land right now. You know, it's like it's right now, this second, every team believes they have a chance to win the Super Bowl this year. And this is a part of it. Free agency is a part of it. That's why super amounts of, rumors get pushed around, ridiculous shit here and there. The draft is even worse than that because these are players that, I mean, they have never played in the league yet. At least if you're signing free agents, they've played in the league before. But no, man, it's just wild right now. That's just Schefter's just trying to hedge his bet a little bit. He's doing a couple different things. He's doing Rosenhaus a solid, you know, going to cash that in the future. He's also hedging his bet because he said, well, there's always a surprise. And it wasn't Drake Jackson, but guess what? This player was drafted before he was supposed to.
If Drake does go like 23rd overall, then he can like kind of take some of the credit for it.
Even if someone else does, even if it's like a freaking Jonathan Abram or Arnett, like that the Raiders took late in the first round that wasn't supposed to go into the second round. Oh, that was the guy. I talked about it I tweeted it out before. It's like, he can just, I don't know. It's freaking lame, dude. Fucking lazy freaking reporting nowadays.
I wish I could talk to my wife the way NFL journalists talk on Twitter. Like, hey, babe, I heard that this may be the last bachelor party of my life. So you better let me go to Tijuana for 2 weeks. And she's like, oh, wow, really? You have an insider that says that? Well, off you go. Here's some condoms, RJ. Have fun.
Like, Hong Kong is a Chinese food place. It's not, I don't know what you heard.
Try the broccoli beef. You'll love it.
Plenty of beef.
Now, with a new regime here in 2022 with the Raiders, we can guess and we can evaluate, and that's what we're going to do, on what their strategy is going to be. Now, I feel like throw everything that the Raiders have done draft-wise completely out the window. even with new head coaches, new GMs, a lot of franchises, a lot of teams still kind of keep a certain character about them.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to the draft, have tendencies. But this was such a giant house cleaning, and this is such a like a U-turn in like policy and procedure. I say whatever the Raiders have done in the past, you throw out the window. Al Davis isn't pulling strings anymore. Gruden's gone. Mayock's gone. The front office had giant changes, right? Mark Davis is basically given Ziegler and McDaniels like carte blanche to do what they want. So this is the rare situation where throw the past completely out the window and just focus on sort of McDaniels and mostly Ziegler. So Dave Ziegler did a pre-draft press conference a week ago on 420. For those of you who celebrate, glad you did. Here's just 66 seconds on general draft policy. Take a listen.
People that are passionate about their jobs, right? We all want to work with those types of people. We all want to hire those types of people that are passionate about their work. So I think it starts there. Good people, good character traits, people that are willing to work with others, people that are selfless, people that are team oriented. Like those are really important things for us. Football intelligence is an important aspect for us. And I think like, you know, kind of on its core, people that love football, people that are good teammates, people that have good football intelligence, those all calculate into low maintenance individuals. And I think the more low maintenance individuals that you have, where you're not expounding energy on, in those different areas, and you can focus just on getting better and winning, I think those are really some of the core criteria for us when we start to talk about a player on whether that player is going to be a fit for the Raiders or not. Forget about the talent and all those types of things. I think it has, those areas have to make sense first, and then you graduate onto the skill set and the value and all those different types of things.
Pretty on brand for Ziegler.
Yep. Well, yeah, I mean, he said low maintenance guys, guys you don't have to worry about fucking drinking and driving and crashing and shit, waving guns on Snapchat, like those type of fucking idiots. Like, you don't have to worry about that shit. The guys that are, he described a professional, someone who looks at football as something that the player loves, but views it also as a profession. Mm-hmm. I need to work at it. I you wouldn't fucking show up drunk to your freaking, you know, to your regular job. Like, I mean, maybe I might, but you know, it's, he's just saying, I don't want any fucking shit dick dumbasses. That's pretty much what he's saying.
I also see what he's saying and how he's, in a way, he's sort of protecting Josh McDaniels, because McDaniels has been very open and honest, and we've seen it in how he's coached when he, you know, those that rare 2.5 seasons when he wasn't with the Pats, that he, that the football knowledge is fine. The X's and O's, he's great. But handling people isn't his strong suit. Now, he's talked about how he's wanted to improve that, and I think there's reasons to be optimistic that he has. But at the end, like, you kind of are who you are. Like, you have your cores. You take those, like, personality tests. Like, right, like, yeah, this guy's just all about the numbers, and this guy's just all about relationships or whatever it may be. Like, you are who you are at your core. McDaniels at his core is X's and O's, pencil in his hand, schematically making an offense, right? People aren't his strong suit. So if you can get guys that are wired like McDaniels, love football, committed to football, I'm smart, I'm not going to screw up. You don't have to worry about McDaniels having to hold the hand of somebody who's a screw up, right? Because that's not his strong suit. He wants people kind of like him. If you had a like Dan Reeves or like a coach that like really like loved their player, a Bisaccia, right? Like
Wade Phillips.
Rich Bisaccia could handle fuck ups because he loved his players and they would love him back and they would, you know, want to be better for him because he's a people guy, right? That's not McDaniels. And so he wants to not only just hire, that's just smart football in general. Don't get screw ups, right? No one wants locker room cancers, but specifically for McDaniels, that exactly shields McDaniels from his perceived weaknesses as a coach.
Well, yeah, and that's also why I think McDaniel and Ziegler are good. And Champ, like, we keep forgetting Champ. Champ's a very big part of the GM group.
Sure.
But that's
the, and his name's Champ. Like, how can you, like, you got to throw him in there, his
right?
Champ,
fucking Champ. Ziegler and Champ, like, they're like the opposite. They're not X's and O guys. They're, you know, talent guys, but they're the guys that are like the guys that are personable, the guys that'll talk to you, the guys, you know, they're the guys that, like, that's the other side. That's why they complement each other really well.
Now, there's another part of this where you can go too far, right? If you're going, so for instance, like, using this philosophy, are you saying they would never draft Randy Moss or Deion Sanders or, you know, a larger than life, look at me, spotlight, maybe a little trouble in the past? That's something to think about, right? If the Raiders have an opportunity to get a five tool, five star, three-time Pro Bowler, but kind of a screw-up, kind of a me, got a DUI 3 years ago. Do the Raiders pass up on that because they're so committed to a very specific type of player? Now, I like what he's saying, and I'm on board with it, but let me ask you, Soto, is there a limit? Is this an absolutist way of looking at talent acquisition?
Never. It never is. There's always it's a sliding scale. It all depends on the talent of the player. And honestly, it's either who the player is now. Are you comfortable that you have a good system set in place, a good environment for that player, right? And also, you know, the sell job that the player and the agent do to the teams. And that's why you meet with these. That's why you meet with these guys. If you're kind of iffy on something, not the talent, of course, but iffy on the player, you meet with them and you talk to them. Hey, man, you know, talk us about this. Look at Micah Parsons last year. You and Rory were like, oh, no, I don't want Micah Parsons. He did that. I'm like, no, dude, this guy is fucking dope. That. Yeah, right. I don't think so. Let's roll tape. No, I was the one. I was like, dude, if we have find a way to get this guy.
We did a whole video on should we get Micah Parsons, and I was on board.
Yeah. Okay. We'll see. We'll see next week. But yeah, it's a sliding scale, man. Because if you have a guy that, like this, for example, Micah Parsons, right? He got in trouble as a freshman, and again as a sophomore, more of a hazing thing. Like, you know, he sat out a year because of COVID. It's like, okay, does he really love football? This and that. And, you know, you sit down and talk to him. Hey, tell us about these situations. You know, what have you learned? Well, how would you handle them different? Shit like that. If you feel comfortable with the answers and you feel comfortable that he's not going to be that kind of distraction moving forward, and the talent is there, it's got to be, the talent has to be overwhelming for you to like hedge on the character issue. That's why the Arnett pick was fucking flabbergasting, because his talent was never that over the top where it, you know,
you can rationalize.
Yeah. He wasn't that guy. He, like I say, he was like the third best corner on his college team.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. But anyway, like if the talent is there, then you have to take a closer look at it. And that's when you have to focus on your like player development and your research.
Fantasy world with me for a second.
Okay.
Let's say that Micah Parsons was actually was in this draft.
Okay.
And the Raiders had the 12th overall pick. That's where Micah Parsons was drafted last season. Does Ziegler take Micah Parsons 12th overall?
Yeah, I think so.
Even with the potential.
Knowing what we know now? Knowing what we know now?
Not knowing he would immediately be. We saw his potential.
No, right? about the person, not the player.
Not knowing now, right? Only what we knew last season about Micah Parsons, but essentially the Raiders in the same position as the Cowboys last season. 12th overall.
Honestly, I think so. I think so because Micah Parsons' story has never changed. From when he was still in college, when he talked about those incidents, or during the drafting process, the pre-draft process, his story never changed. And it wasn't like a canned, written out answer that he gave. It was like, yo, you know, we were younger. I wasn't as mature as I am now. I see how that's wrong and how it could affect a teammate. And you're supposed to be, you know, you can kid, but it can get too far. And And you know, nowadays I'm the guy that stands up for his teammates, and we have to all feel inclusive. And I know how much more important it is for us to work as a team together. So building that unity is more important than, you know, than any type of hazing or anything like that. So it's like his answer didn't change. Of course, it changed a little bit, you know, verbiage wise, but the tone of his answer never changed. So you could tell it was, you know, it was from the heart, and he didn't have any problems last year, you know, personally, in Dallas. So I mean, with his talent, yeah, you have to take a look at it. And I would assume that he would convince Ziegler and Champ, like he convinced everyone in Dallas.
Yeah, but Dallas is all about taking high risk, high reward, guys. You know what I'm saying? I mean, this is
not Ziegler necessarily saying, in the first round, though.
I feel like it's part of their. It's Jerry Jones. It's like, give me something sexy. Give me something I can sell.
Who have they taken in the first round that was like a freaking huge character risk?
I think it's just generally they pick up tough character guys.
Yeah, I agree with that. They picked up Lil Collins when no one else touched him. You know, Greg Hardy. Right. Lil Collins went undrafted, and they freaking signed him right after the draft was over. But I want to see them doing that in the first round, though.
We'll see. We'll see when, you know.
Yeah, if someone drops for whatever reason and he's still there. Again, I said a couple weeks ago, I think that we have the type of locker room that can absorb a little speck here and there.
Yeah, it's a weird kind of petri dish that you do the science with, right? You're like, all right, the white T cells can kill this, you know, this number of infection, so we can handle absorbing that talent, but also the assholeness because we can corral it. But can we handle three players like that? Can we handle six players like that? Can we only handle zero players like that? It's a delicate balance. And you can see why, you know, obviously I think Ziegler and McDaniels came to the Raiders for multiple reasons, but I think somewhere on that list was the character guys that are like them, right? Like, again, regardless of what you think of Derek Carr, the player, he's high character, loves football, hard worker, smart guy. So is Renfro. So is Crosby. So is Waller. So is all the leaders on this team. Miller, Perryman. Like, these are all wired like Ziegler and McDaniels. And I think they're going to start drafting that way too. Another guy who's also like that, and I've obviously, you know, clearly I've been following this player since he's been in the NFL. I followed him when he was in Fresno State, but now that he's a Raider, I've kind of like dove deeper and deeper and deeper into like who Davante Adams is. Like, I'm, you know, reading interviews he did when he was in high school, right? Like, I'm diving into this guy. I'm still doing backflips that he's a Raider, right?
You're so, like, pumped.
Just nerding out on Davante Adams constantly. But Davante Adams is also exactly like Josh McDaniels, Dave Ziegler. Smart player, hard worker, humble guy, you know, humble roots. And also, yeah, by the way, freaking stud. So he talked to the Raiders.com, talked to Eric Allen, and he was asked, what is your first impression of Josh McDaniels?
Just similar mindsets. We both obsessed with winning, and obviously he got a great track record of doing that.
Yeah.
Been to a bunch of, you know, he's been to the dance a bunch of times.
Oh, a bunch of times.
Got a bunch of rings as well. So, I'm blessed to be able to work with a guy like that because he, you know, based off the conversations we've had, he's not trying to change anything I do. He wants to kind of more so manipulate, you know, the way he's doing things to fit the way, you know, what we have as players. And he knows what I do as far as the, you know, in the film. And he said more so, and I appreciated that he said this. He said, your tape is secondary to the stuff that I've heard about you.
So a couple things from that 32 second clip.
Refreshing.
First one, and this is not the one you think, but that's also important. First one is, this sounds like a guy, McDaniels, who's learned his people skills, who's learned his, I'm the coach talking to football player skills, the I want this player to feel good about me skills. Told Davante, hey, we're going to adjust to you. You're so badass. You're so good at football that we're going to change to you. You're the superstar. So we're going to work around you to make you the best as possible. Now, all we need you to do is to carry your weight on that end. Imagine imagine going to any job, right? You're a carpenter, truck driver, lawyer, fucking giving hand jobs under the bridge, whatever your job is, and your boss says, I want you to be you. I know you're a star. So I'm going to change what I do to get the best out of you. How are you going to feel? You're like, oh, I'm going to run through a brick wall for this guy. Like, great. Awesome. And this is exactly what I want, what we're hoping. You're sure he's the way. I'm cautiously optimistic that he has learned from his past mistakes and has become a player's coach and a people person. And this is, in my eyes, a good piece of evidence that he may be that guy that you're sure he is, and I'm hoping he is.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things as far as McDaniels goes, that it's like you want to tell someone whoa instead of giddy up, right? So you want somebody to like be pushing. You want to have somebody be pushing forward and like being pushing the envelope and trying to be creative, right? I think maybe it's the first time around JMD was a little bit too creative and wanted to make Tebow into something and like really change the NFL landscape and all this shit. So he took the intangibles over.
I think McDaniels wanted to show off with Tebow.
Yeah,
look what
I can do with this guy. He's got all his intangibles. Well, you know what? He's got to be able to throw the ball fucking first, right?
Yeah.
I think he's learned from that, and I think he still has that in him where he's going to be able to be more flexible and creative, but talent first. Get the talent first, and then you can be flexible and creative, which he is. He has been. Look what he did last year with whatever the fuck his name was. That was a quarterback last year for them. I forgot.
Jones?
Yeah, Mac Jones.
Yeah,
look what he did with Mac Jones. He didn't have like what anyone would really call a number one receiver or number one target even. They got a couple of, you know, they caught a couple of tight ends.
$22 million Nelson Aguilar. What else? Yeah, what else could you want?
Caught 40 fucking balls. So, it's like he had a couple of tight ends that were okay, that were like, you know, second tier tight ends.
Yeah.
But that was really it. And he was still able to, you know, get to the playoffs and score some points. And so he's kind of, you know, pulled back a little bit on being overly creative and not losing sight of what you need before anything else, and that's talent. So he sees the talent and he sees what, you know, Devontae does well. So you can definitely put a system. And like I said before, the reason why Devontae Adams is going to be such a big change and a big help to this offense is when you have that kind of talent on your team, it changes the way the opposing team defends you. So it changes. It's not just like having a good player. It's having like an elite player at that position. It changes the way the secondary defends you because they have to really shift a lot of the resources to stopping him. And then you have Renfro and Waller, and you have guys out of the backfield and Edwards and all these other guys that you can throw to. So, I mean, yeah, I see that McDaniels is really going to make a big leap moving forward and not just having to like patch stuff together. Because when you have talent, like he didn't really have a lot of offensive talent in the Patriots last year, but when he's had real talent on that team, those teams have been putting up some fucking major points.
And this is the irony about Devontae Adams is Josh McDaniels' strength. And this is the other, the thing that when you were saying refreshing, as soon as we played that clip, it's like, yeah, like we have a coach that's going to adjust the offense to his players and not just say like, this is my system. Like John Gruden was, right?
We have a fucking adult coaching, not a freaking ego man child
adjusting his shit. But this is the irony is like when you have a Devontae Adams, the best player at that position, you don't have to change your offense because this guy's good at everything, right? Like that's the irony. Like it's nice that he is, but like, you know, Hunter Renfro, amazing. Mwah, love him. Pro bowler. He fits in a box, right? He's in the slot. Underneath, you know, he can shimmy and shake and beat guys and, you know, he could return punts and, you know, he's diverse, but you know, this is what he does. And he does it amazingly. You know, Josh Jacobs, he's not going to break one for 80. He's not going to outrun the entire defense, but he'll break three tackles and get you the 7 yards that you need. Right. Devontae Adams is the 5-tool best receiver in football. He can do everything. He can do everything. And yet Josh McDaniels is like, all right, let me figure something out. Like, he's still saying, let me figure out different ways to get the best out of you. When other coaches could be like, oh, you're the best. We're paying you all this money. You do what I tell you. And Adams would probably say, yes, yes, sir. Like, you're, you know, for the money you're giving me, I will.
Yeah, it's obvious what McDaniels and the offensive staff has done. They've studied probably every single play that Davante Adams has played in his entire life. And they see, okay, this is where he excels. These are the schemes and these are the concepts where he excels, where he does his best in. And how can we fit that in the mold where this is what Renfro does his best? This is where Renfro is at his best. This is where Waller is at his best. This is where Drake and Edwards, these are where these guys are at their best. How do we mold all those things into concepts to then build a system? And it's refreshing because you know that the kind of lip service that we've been fed since the beginning of this regime, where we're going to have be able to be multiple and we'll be able to be flexible. And you're going to be able to highlight different players depending on what the defense gives you and historically what they've been good at and bad at. So having that kind of flexibility to kind of move into, not really change your scheme, but like highlight different things about your scheme, it's going to make a big difference. And I'm really excited about it. I'm really excited to see it.
So I have one pet peeve.
Okay.
All right. There's already one thing that really bothers me about Davante. Love him on the Raiders. So glad he's here. Again, I've been a quartermaster since he's been here. But he's already struck a nerve with me.
Is it the hi-hat? The way he freaking wears his hat nice and high?
That I can live with.
Okay. He just lays it on top of his head.
Got all the when you got those giant dreads, right? Like, how else are you gonna do it, right? This is what bothers me about
him. I'm the most humble man in the world.
I'm the most humble man in the world.
I'm the most humble man in the world.
How can you brag about being humble? It's not possible. If you're humble, you don't brag about it.
Yeah, platinum and diamond chain on.
You don't say you're humble. How do you say I'm the most humble man in the world? I'm so humble. I'm so much more humble than you, Soto. Really? I'm the most humble guy in Long Beach. Boy, if you guys saw me, you'd realize how humble I am. I'm going to get a neon sign that's going to go out in front of my house that has an arrow pointing down to me that says the most humble guy in the world.
That's pretty bad.
How do you say you're the? It's like chicks that say how hot they are. It's like, you don't need to tell me how hot you are. I can look at you and I can see if you're hot or not. Oh, girl, I'm so hot. Look at these titties. I'm the sexiest thing around. Like, you don't have to say anything. I can see if you're hot or not, right? Like people who say how funny they are. Like, you know, I'm a real comedian. I'm a real crack up. You know. I make people laugh all the time. I'm a real comedian. Like I can tell if you're funny or not. Like you don't.
Like most of the time, not.
Those aren't things you tell people. Those are things you prove to people. And humility is the number one. Because literally, the second you say how humble you are,
you stop being humble.
You've just knocked 7 notches off of your humility meter. Now, Davante, by all intents and purposes, and everything we've learned about him, pretty humble guy, right? And it might just be him, you know, in an interview and he's like rattling things off. But come on.
Davante, tell your fans, tell your new fans in Las Vegas, what is something they don't know about you? Well, I'm the most humble man in the world, number one. I'm only wearing, you know, $150,000 around my neck. Look, like, I'm gonna stop because I'm not gonna disparage the good name.
I don't want to disparage him either. I'm just saying like my little pet peeve about him. It's been established. I'm sure that he is.
All right, let's move on, RJ.
But it wasn't even like player. He's like, hey, I want to show the world my humility, or I want to like display my like. It's like literally like I'm the most humble man in the world.
I pride myself in really just you know being the humblest man in the room, no matter what room I'm in. Mm-hmm. And it's something I take with pride and. I feel like I like being recognized for being humble too.
My humility is on steroids. I was in a room with Mother Teresa and Gandhi, and I can tell. I looked right in the eyes, and they knew I was 10 times more humble than them. Like I slapped my dick of humbleness on their foreheads. I'm so humble.
Ew. That's assault, brother.
That's the worst name for a dick, probably, is Humble.
You got a humble dick?
Yeah. It's like, what's the name of your dick? Humble. Ugh. No ladies.
How do we get into this?
You're a pervert.
That's not true. I don't think that's true. Well, it is true, but that's not how we got here.
I'm not a pervert. You're the biggest pervert of all. I don't watch porn at all. You're such a pervert, and not me. I'm the most unpervert guy around.
That's RJ, there is not a 5 square foot radius in your house where there's not some kind of pornography.
Well, I'm very traditional with my porn. Pornhub on my computer and my phone. Very simple.
Dude, you got a Betamax. You got a Betamax fucking, you got freaking tapes everywhere.
I am such a stickler.
RJ's football. Like, that ain't RJ's football on that shit. What the hell?
I got a 2.5-year-old running around. I gotta keep it quarantined.
Yeah.
So the Darren Waller trade rumor was obviously the big news in Raider Nation this week. Because there's no other news. We don't have a first or second round draft pick.
Packers booty holes got all wet.
Packers got so hot and bothered about it, thinking like, oh yeah, it's on. Game time. We got him. And we've all seen that, you know, I talked about it extensively on my Q&A show yesterday. And then this came out. So we saw, like, I said all yesterday, like, look, is there a chance Waller gets traded? Like, sure. Yeah. I mean, okay, we've seen crazier trades. It's possible. But the whole story that, yeah, the guy from Cheesehead TV said two anonymous sources say that they're discussing it, that could mean anything. It could mean literally anything. It could mean the third string scout and the second string GM from Green Bay in Las Vegas bumped into each other at a bar and said, hey, what about Waller? Like, bam, like, there's your story, right? It got leaked for a reason, right? And I shot it down. Derek Carr said, LOL. Jeremy Fowler, ESPN, tweeted, like, all my sources say not a chance. And then Darren Waller went on CBS Sports Radio this week and said this.
Do you expect to be with the Raiders? Like, if it's up to you, you plan on being with the Raiders this year?
Yeah, absolutely. I love being here. I love playing with my guys. Really enjoyed these new coaches and how they're challenging us out the gate. So, yeah, I love being in Las Vegas. I love playing for the Raiders.
Have you had any conversations with the team since this report emerged, just trying to get some clarity on if they're actually looking to trade you or not?
Yeah, I've had talks with the team, and they said this is not a thing that's happening. There's no trade that's going to happen. And like I said, we just focusing on football, getting better, learning the system, and seeing where it's going to take us this year.
I like the sound of that. Sorry, Packers fans. You're stuck with Rodgers thrown to nobody.
Yeah, whatever guy you can snag with that 22 pick.
Now, again, if you listen to the whole interview with Darren Waller, I highly suggest you check it out. The clip they put on Twitter is about 2.5 minutes. That was like, 37 seconds of it. In fairness, Waller kind of sounded like he didn't really want to talk about it. He didn't like do the interview to come in with conviction and say, "I'm a Raid for life. I'm not going anywhere." He's no dummy. He knows that you always want people looking to acquire your services. No matter what job you have, you always want your boss to know, I could probably double my salary if I go and work at the store across the street. You know, I got headhunters looking for me. Like, you always want people to know that, right? Not everyone's Derek Carr, who's like, I'm going to be a Raider for life and I'll take less money, right? In fact,
Nobody is that.
Nobody's like that, right? And so Darren Waller, still, you know, not being a dumbass businessman, but still being a, you know, loyal to his team and having his priorities straight, are like, look, no, I've been told it's not happening and I want to be a Raider. But he kind of had an undertone, Soto, that said, like, I'm not going to be too convicted about this. Like, I want people to know that I'm wanted, but I ain't getting traded this offseason. I'm playing in the silver and black in the 2022 season.
He basically took all of the kind of, like, I don't want to say blame, but he took the high road. And if it does happen, it's like, well, I wanted to stay there. The team wanted to move on. It wasn't about
I was
my
told
contract.
I wasn't going anywhere.
It wasn't about my contract. I didn't say I wanted to leave. I only said the opposite. I said I wanted to stay. So it just so happens that I got traded to a place and I immediately signed a lucrative multi-year contract.
Yeah. And it's not like it's Darren Waller's call, right? It's not like he has a no trade clause or he has, you know, like obviously you can hold out and there's, you know, players have some rights, but like it's 2 years left on his contract. Like he got traded. It's not really.
That's why I'm not worried about, you know, guys are like, oh, what are we going to do with Waller's contract? We don't have to worry about Waller till next year. Mm-hmm. We're fine. Don't trip.
You ready to do some what up winbacks?
Yes.
From my 2 cents, unless moves are made, O-line will be the Raiders' Achilles heel in 2022. I think you're 100% right.
I agree.
That sounds, if there's going to be an Achilles heel,
assuming they're going to play poorly. They don't necessarily. They can be the weakest link as far as squads go, as position groups go. Doesn't mean necessarily they're going to play poorly, but I mean, given a couple of the players that are slotted to start, and some of the numbers that we ran through last week, yeah, there's got to be some improvement made. I mean, I saw a video of Leatherwood, you know, doing some drills, and he looked a lot better with nobody rushing him.
one breezed by him. He looked amazing.
As poorly as he played last year, I need to see it against competition. I need to see it before, did you guys see Leatherwood? He's working out. He's trimmed down. His footwork is better. Great. Yeah, against air. No, I need to see that against players, and then I'll freaking start changing my tune. If indeed I change my tune.
What if it was just like the highlights of Leatherwood and it's him like trying to block and he's still falling over? Like the air hits a swim move on him and he trips and falls on his face. Oh, God. The coach is hiking the ball and he's still doing like false starts.
He's false starting. Like, oh, wait, I thought you said two.
Still just kind of like fell over in his stance. Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, I would say I'm generally more worried about consistency in history than I am question marks, because I believe there's big question marks in with their DBs. I mean, there's this question marks, like Rocky Sin's new. It's not like he was some Pro Bowler in Indy, right? Like he was fine. He wasn't amazing, right? We're hoping that Trevin Moehrig, our second year player, and Nate Hobbs, like second year players, can continue, right? Maybe they're just rookie anomalies, right? There's question marks in DB, which would be, I think, the next position group that I'd kind of maybe be worried about. Defensive line, we're set. Wide receiver, we're set. Tight end, we're set. Right? Quarterback,
linebacker,
back.
We're looking okay.
Linebacker, good, right? Question marks in DB, but the history of our O-line, how they played last season, and it's all the same guys, more or less. Yeah. I would say if there's one unit that's going to that looks like they may fail us next season, it's O-line.
I mean, I don't want any position group to fail us, but yeah, if I had to pick one, it probably would be the offensive line.
Because of the history, right? Like last season, they weren't great. Now, again, if you want to be, you know, the optimist, which I am the eternal optimist with the Raiders, it's what I've been saying forever, is continuity is key to everything. And you've got five guys without injury history, super young. Like that's a recipe for all five starters play number one of week one to be the same five starters of the last play of the Super Bowl, right? Like that's a squad where you can, that rarely ever happens. But if you want that to happen, you go young with no injury history. No injury history is not fair, but for offensive lineman standards,
limited,
very, very limited injury history, both in college and in
college. There's one big difference here. You need to start with talent. You need to be talented. And that's, I think, the issue with a couple of the players on our line. I just don't think they're good enough. I don't think that even maximize his potential. I don't know if Jonathan Simpson is a starting player on most teams in the NFL. I don't think that Brandon Parker is a starting player on most teams in the NFL. I just don't see it. Leatherwood is yet to be seen because he's only played 1 year, but I see them as rotational guys, backups, and you have to have the talent there. Cohesion and familiarity, all that stuff is great, but you got to have talent. You have to be talented because a cohesive group that's more talented is better than a cohesive group that's not as talented. So you got to start there. You have to be talented first. And I think there's a couple of places on the line that, you know, have some concerns.
Hater 623. This is a response to the Mike Florio vid of him shitting on Derek Carr for the last half decade. Tebow and Carr, big Christian men. And this guy hates on both of them and works for NBC. NBC, the media that spews anti-Christian narratives. So this is a version of dozens of comments I got.
Yeah.
We got on the Florio video, right? It's like, we're like, hey, yeah, I think Florio, he hates Carr just because he's just a lazy broadcaster and he wants a hot take. And, you know, Carr blocked him on Twitter. And so he's, you know, has a vendetta against him. But dozens of people commented with basically the same thing. It's like, yeah, he hates Tebow. He hates Carr because they're both very outspoken Christians and Florio hates Christians.
You know, it's, I don't know if that's necessarily the case. I don't know, man. It's just, it's a big reach for me. I think more so is not the Christianity portion. It's the phoniness thing that he brought up when he was talking about Carr. He brought up Tebow's name too, about being phony, acting like a phony. Mm-hmm. And then he said something really strange. He said, well, he acted like it so much that he became that person. It's like, well, then that's not phony then. If that's who he is now, if he's acted that way for so long and he's become that person.
And that's the lawyer in him bringing that, because you, because therefore he's given himself an out for something you can't prove. Cause if he's been the same way his entire career, like if Derek Carr has always been Derek Carr, right? Or Derek Carr was faking it and now he is it. You can't prove it in 2022. You can't be like, oh, look, Derek Carr. Oh, he became something he wasn't. You can't prove that. So Florio gave himself an out. And so when Derek Carr does something like absolutely puts his money where his mouth is and takes a team friendly deal and says, I'm going to be a Raider for life. I want to do this for my teammates. Last time I took a big contract, I lost my best friend. And he literally put his money where his mouth is. Florio can say, well, yeah, he's still phony. He just kind of became who he pretended to be.
Yeah. It's that's stupid. That's his out. It's dumb.
And it's like, just give me some evidence. If you think he's phony, You're a lawyer, Florio. Give me some evidence. Why is he phony? And you couldn't, because all of his actions have followed his words. I'm a diehard Christian. Okay, there's never been an instance where you got in trouble. You've been found, you know, cheating on your wife, or the guy like preaches like regularly to congregations. Like he walks all his talks, 100% of the time. Brent Fox. And I'll let you guess what the avatar of his YouTube handle is.
A small cheese curds.
Packers logo. Man, I still can't believe Adams wanted to play for the freaking Raiders. Not going to enjoy watching Derek Carr and the Raiders kill off a once Hall of Fame promising career.
Because no receiver ever had a good season other than playing in Green Bay.
Thank you. Yeah, because Derek Carr and the Raiders in the last 10 years are notorious for taking, you know, all pro wide receivers and making them terrible. Yeah, that's the MO of the Raiders. It's been the opposite. Amari Cooper's best years were in Oakland. Crabtree's best years, Oakland. Nelson Aguilar was an afterthought, thrown to the wayside, went nuts one year with Derek Carr and the Raiders, became a $22 million wide receiver.
Raiders and Carr took fucking Waller from the trap house to the penthouse.
It's been literally the opposite. This Derek Carr and this version of the Raiders, the last like almost decade, have taken trash and turned them into rich Pro Bowlers. And now we actually have a rich Pro Bowler. Imagine what we're going to do with him.
Mm-hmm. And a creative offensive coordinator / head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I like the Packers organization. Like it's, you know, it's a fine franchise. Obviously, the Raiders don't have like a bad history with them. You know, they've had back-to-back Hall of Fame quarterbacks, and they've won some Super Bowls. You know,
we'll see what
our friend AJ Hawk, you know, played on there. It's, you know, it's a fine franchise.
I like AJ. I just want to see what happens when they don't have a franchise Hall of Fame level quarterback. They didn't just have good quarterbacks; they had Hall of Famers,
first
back to
ballot
back.
Hall of Famers.
Yeah, no doubt, first back, multiple MVP, Hall of Fame quarterbacks back to back. Let's see how they do run their business without that. Mm-hmm. If it's Jordan Love, it doesn't look good.
I'm just glad that we got a Packer, because if we got a Bronco, if we got a Charger, if we got a Bear, if we got a Pat, like, they have really annoying fans. Like, it would be like our comment sections would be just loaded of super pissed off Pats fans that we got their number one wide receiver.
We have several Chiefs fans loading up our live shows every freaking week
for nothing. Like, well, we had another Chiefs, right? And they're still assholes.
Yeah,
I'm just glad the Packers have like a fair and decent fan base, and so like we get maybe one comment of like, you know, I get it. We ripped your heart out. We took Devontae Adams. Like, you were literally in bed with a Playboy playmate, and we schmoozed her away from you, and now we're fucking her. I get why you're upset. Totally understand. But, and then this is like the worst comment we get about that. That's not bad at all. That's the equivalent to like a mean text.
I expected more from Brent Fox, honestly. Yeah.
Sorry, Brent. All right, that's it for us. We got the draft. You're probably listening to this the day of the draft, so enjoy day one of not drafting anybody, at least as of now. Maybe there's some crazy trade.
You never know.
And then even day two, no second round pick. So
no, day two on, we pick in third round.
Second, yeah. The afternoon, late morning? Depends.
No, it's going to be in the evening. It's going to be in the evening again.
At time?
Yeah.
Next week, episode 100.
Woo.
Big deal. We still know what we're doing. We're not as organized as we pretend we are. I know you look at us and you guys are like, wow, you guys are the peak of professionalism. You guys have got everything. Your shit together. Looks to me deceiving. Yeah, but we're excited. I can't believe we got to 100. We'll do something special.
I can't believe I can count to 100.
But until then, knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Autumn Windbags. We really appreciate it. Make sure you give us a follow on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter, all the social medias. And we will see you next week for episode 100 of The Autumn Windbags. Till next time. Later.